Thank you, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you tonight. It's 11 o'clock. It's time to reload this week's news. Biggest stories. Overreported, underreported, winners, losers. What story sucks you down the rabbit hole? Which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? There's a lot to choose from. In studio tonight to help us, the panel, Ray Long, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Good to see you, Ray.
Hello there, Justin.
And Heather Sharon. Heather, of course, the City Hall reporter for DNA Info. Heather, good to see you.
Always happy to be here.
And, of course, you, 312-981-7200. If you have some ideas for what the biggest stories are, the winners, losers, kind of comments on what's overreported, underreported, 312-981-7200. All right, well, why don't we get to the biggest story of the week? I mean, at first I was like, there's no brainer, but I mean, geez, just even today, whether it be the ousting of Priebus or the soda tax law. Okay, so let's get in. But we all still agree the biggest story was what happened in the Senate last night.
100%.
Yes, yes. Just craziness, pure craziness to go to this point where we're battling now, and then we do this skinny repeal, and then we're all frozen wondering what will happen, and then John McCain comes riding up on his white horse. He might as well have been on a horse in the Senate chambers, and boom, he says no, and then we're stalled again.
You know, I was thinking about this, and a lot of my job is tracking laws and, you know, watching as they go through the process and making sure that I understand sort of where they are and
what they
mean. And it's not the easiest thing in the city of Chicago. I used to cover government in California, and they have much stronger open meeting laws and open document laws. But here, at least in Chicago, there's a 48-hour notice, or if it's an emergency situation, it's a 24-hour notice. Last night, I was glued to C-SPAN, being the good political junkie that I am. And, you know, it is, you know, boggles my mind that skinny repeal, I'm using air quotes, I'm on the radio, you can't see that, it was introduced at 10 o'clock, and then they voted on it at midnight. So that's when the vote was scheduled. It was delayed because McCain threw a wrench in the works. But in between that time, the Republican senator from Wyoming, Enzi, he spent an hour filibustering and refusing to answer questions about what this legislation is. And, you know, it was such high political drama. I mean, I saw a tweet from TV columnist James Poniewozik of the New York Times, and he was tweeting with Alan Sepinwall, who writes about TV for Up Rocks, and they said they were sort of imagining this as written by Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
And Alan Sepinwall's response was, no, it's a little macho.
Ray, I mean, the real takeaway on this, and you kind of, if you paid attention to the political, I guess, the waves this week, Senator McCain went at it with his speech earlier in the week where he said, enough of this stuff. Let's get back to, I forgot what he called it. It's been such a week, but he's just like, let's get back to the idea of normalcy here in the Senate. This is not how we do things, tricks and smokescreens and hiding things and introducing bills at the last minute. Yet it seemed like Mitch McConnell did it again, and he got burned.
Well, you know, and that happens in state legislatures, certainly with ours, you know, where there can suddenly be something that pops up. But the idea that McCain had that kind of comeback speech after having this heavy-duty cancer operation only a few days before, and he calls basically for the Senate to come back to the higher moral ground on this whole craziness that's happening in
essentially changing the rules.
Yeah, that's right. And so then he comes out and he is that swing vote, and basically by voting no and joining two other Republicans voting no, they denied the Republicans, Mitch McConnell, a chance to get anything through on Obamacare repeal right now. And really, what that does is that McCain has thrown this into the potential of getting some kind of bipartisan effort.
You heard Chuck Schumer afterwards saying, let's go back into committees, let's try to work together. Yeah. John McCain, of course, let's take the high ground, let's get back together. Mitch McConnell saying, I'd love to hear your side. What do you guys want to do? Talking to the Democrats. Do you think that that might be a cue that we might see some bipartisan work coming out? I mean, Schumer did say that Obamacare is flawed and we have to fix it. The Republicans have said the same thing. Is there any way that they say, you know what, we're all going to work together on this, or is it really still about who wins and who loses?
Go ahead. I mean, you know, I mean, I think it really is about.
Gosh, I sure wish I had a crystal ball. But if I could go back for a minute, we've spent, I don't know, 10 minutes or so talking about John McCain. I feel duty bound to note that his vote only mattered because of Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, who were nose pretty much from the beginning. Yeah. And McCain is only the swing vote because they said no. And I think it bears talking a little bit if we're talking about rules and norms and talking about what happened to Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who was literally called by the Interior Secretary and you know, by all accounts, according to the Alaska newspaper, was told, gee, you've got a really nice state there. It would be a shame if something happened to it because you're not going to vote for, you know, Obamacare repeal. Right. And, you know, she is one of, you know, only a handful of women in the Senate, an even smaller fraction of Republican women. And, you know, she refused to hold scheduled hearings on the Interior Department. So, you know, John McCain, you know, is a war hero and will be, if not in the first line of his obituary, it will be in the second paragraph of his obituary. It's hard to top, you know, I survived 5 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam and then ran for president and served for decades in the Senate. But, you know, his vote matters because two women stood up
Took a lot of crap. I mean, there was weird statements from other senators who were like, oh, if they were men, I'd have a duel.
Yes.
And there's like physical. It was just what is happening? And you're absolutely right. And today there was a great tweet that I read where someone said, welcome to every day at every job for a woman, where McCain, that's happening in boardrooms everywhere, where a guy gets all the credit and the women did the work.
So. Every female reporter I have ever worked with has had the experience of sitting in a pitch meeting and pitching a story and having no response. And then the man sitting next to her repeating it almost word for word and being greeted with rapturous, you know, adulation and hosannas as they throw, you know, resources at him as he walks out of the door.
Well, we definitely are going to pay attention to the story, not only just tonight, but as we move on. 312-981-7200. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll start down the winners and losers categories. A big week for I had a hard time with winners. Big week for losers. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Ray Long, Heather Schroen in studio. We're doing winners and losers now as we reload this week's news. Why don't we go to winners? Heather, you got a winner who I think was in the loser category last week,
but
she has turned it around.
Yeah. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle is going to sleep much easier tonight. Today, a judge announced that the much maligned soda tax, pop tax, is going to go into effect in Wednesday.
She says sweetened beverage
yes.
tax.
Well, because it's a very complicated ordinance.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was facing the prospect of a $200 million deficit next year, not to mention a, you know, $68 million deficit for the rest of this fiscal year. And that now seems like maybe she won't have to fill.
Okay, I'll ask about the two things that automatically come to mind. What happens to those layoffs that our people have already gotten their pink slips on? And what, I mean, is it the end or are we in the game? We know better as politically minded consumers of the news. It's going to be appeal, 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 appeal all the way to wherever.
Right. I would be shocked if the Illinois Retail Merchants Association didn't appeal the judge's decision today. So it's certainly not done. And that's why Tony Preckwinkle hasn't rescinded any of those layoffs, because I think the possibility of another judge coming in and reversing him and reimposing the ban is a real possibility. And I think that quite rightly, President Preckwinkle doesn't want to get into a situation where she's laying people off, not laying people off, and then laying them off again. But I can tell you from talking to county officials yesterday and this morning, no one thought that this judge was going to allow the soda tax to move forward. So it is manna from heaven for her.
I mean, and I guess it's such a strange story, too, because even she's had trouble advocating for it in the way that the narrative has changed from at one point we need it to plug the revenue hole. Oh, but this is also about the health of our citizens in Cook County. There were a lot of mixed messages around this. And a very concerted effort and lobby effort from the Retail Merchants Association and others to say, hey, listen, this is too much tax. You're doubling what it costs to get a 2-liter pop. This is not what we want in Cook County, and a concerted effort to stop that.
Oh, yeah. And I think that they felt that they had a good argument, too, and they won the TRO. And so the problem there is that a TRO is just that. Let's stop things, let's get a grip on things, and let's study it through. And I think you're right, Heather, that a lot of the politicians thought, this judge, no way he's going to let that go. But he actually ruled on what seemed to be a sensible law. Why couldn't you tax these beverages away? And it's not just sweetened or sugar sweetened, it's artificially sweetened drinks too. So we're all going to feel
now, Heather, I'll ask you this. You covered, and I got into it a little bit with the Cook County Board President, which is on the show last week. I said, it's kind of like, what do you do when you think about the bag tax? The idea that if the goal is to make something better, and you have projected how much revenue is going to come in, if you succeed in making it better, that revenue is going to come down. She says it's more like the cigarette tax. That's what she was saying. That's not like the bag tax, more like cigarette tax. But either way, the idea that the government is depending on a huge chunk of revenue and at the same time saying we need to stop our citizens from drinking this. So I you see what I mean? Like the idea that if it is about budget hole, then I'm afraid that if it's she's successful in trying to deal with obesity, there's still going to be a budget hole.
Well, her argument would be, and you know, this is of course to be seen, is that if you're Cook County residents who are reliant on the public hospital system, drink sweetened beverages, fewer of them will develop diabetes and other health-related issues that are putting a very significant burden on the county health system. So her argument is that it will benefit both the front end in terms of money coming in, but it will also benefit the back end, and there will be less money going into the health system, and there will be fewer people suffering from really, you know, horrific diseases. You know, people lose limbs, people lose eyesight from diabetes. It's a very serious issue. But I think your argument is, what is the aim of this tax is a really good one. Do we need this because we can't pay our bills and, you know, it's a zero sum game. You either, you know, cut spending or you raise revenue or you borrow money. Okay. Well, it's not a zero sum game, but it's three options.
Sure.
Or are we doing this because we want to be as a society healthier and we're making this decision collectively? I don't know.
I guess they can coexist, but it seems like it's a hard sell.
Well, Richard Boykin, the Cook County Commissioner, who's been a big critic of the tax, said today after court that he believed Tony Preckwinkle's very public layoffs bullied the judge into reconsidering his take on the tax. And I don't know that we have any evidence of that because he had a 15-page ruling that was very sort of drawn out about the legal basis for his decision. But, I wrote tons of stories about these layoffs. The Tribune wrote a lot of stories about, you know, judges don't live in vacuums.
And seemed to be part of seemed a little bit to be, I'm not saying that that's what the president did, but it does seem to be effective in the way that if the court takes their time, there will be consequences. That's essentially what she said.
Absolutely.
All right, Ray, you got a story, a winners this week, which is it's more literal in the way that it's sport. But
absolutely. Yeah, mine is the Cubs. I mean, they have just come blowing out of the gates here since the All-Star break. And what we have only seen a couple of games that they've lost. They've taken over first place. They're going into Milwaukee. They're playing right now. And in fact, we're going to feel that whole fever again.
There was a concern before the All-Star break that we weren't, that this would be sort of what we know of Cubdom, where they win 1 year and they lose the next. But they, in a week and a half's time, have turned us back into a pennant fever city.
Yeah, we got a new pitcher from the White Sox, and Schwarbaum 2 last night. We were rocking again. Rizzo's got 24 home runs.
And Chris Bryant didn't break his finger off in that ridiculous sliding play.
Quintana is throwing great, so we're seeing some action there.
I had on my story, which was about the Cubs, but it was, and I'll just mention it and we'll move on, but the Cubs and the mayor are getting it's such an interesting fight. They continually have conflict. And this time it's about 54. The Cubs want the full max night game load that the Major League Baseball will let in its 54 games. The city's like, nah.
Well, what's interesting is that the way the ordinance and the Cubs with the Cubs works is they say you can have a total number of 46. Do with what you want with 46. You can do night games or you can do concerts. The Cubs keep all of the money from the concerts.
So they
scheduled as many concerts as they could, and that was essentially the mayor's point. You want more night games? Sure. That's the limit. You can either have concerts or you can have games that you have to split with Major League Baseball. What's interesting was how angry the mayor was.
He didn't see. He was talking about closed door meetings, and he was sitting right in my office. And yeah,
I mean, there's really not a lot of love lost between the mayor and Crane Kenny, the president of baseball operations.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, of course, you know, the mayor is a huge Cubs fan. He was in Cleveland when they won the series. But I think there's a sense that from City Hall that the Cubs are trying to push that envelope as far as they can.
Yeah. Heather Sharone, Ray Long in studio. We will take a break and update on tonight's news, and we will come back. We'll do the losers. This is the big category. There's a lot of losers this week. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. It's Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Ray Long, Heather Sharone in studio tonight. As we reload this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right, so I guess we go to the one everyone's waiting for, the losers category. A lot of this, you know, this segment. We do biggest story, winners, losers, underreported, overreported. Which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 5,500 years from this week? But let's, the loser category, a lot going on. But let's start tonight with some breaking news. Ray, you guys have been on fire at the Chicago Tribune, really going after something that at first just felt like a holdover, you know, not even, innocent's not the right word, but just like people forwarding dumb racist emails.
Yes.
Right. You get that. I mean, that this has started with the water department, but you've been on this team that's exposed something that's much bigger.
Yeah. What we've done in the latest is that Frank Capuzzi, a state worker who had been there in the state about 40 years, turns out to be one of the guys, the main guy who was forwarding many of these racist, really over the top emails, the ones that were
sexist, homophobic, I mean, yes, all the way down the line, right?
And so he was the one sending these into the water department, and then they were spreading around from there. But so we wrote about that on Monday, and then tonight, right before we came here in the studio, we filed a story that said that he has retired now from the state. He's going to have his last day on Monday. So he's the latest casualty in a casualty string that has included five people from the water department and a private construction group, too.
There are a lot of levels in this story. I mean, the first is, all right, who still forwards emails?
Right.
Number one. That's number one of those of that kind. But two, the idea that this was, it's this thing that we've seen, especially in city departments or state departments,
right.
This boys club kind of idea,
yeah.
Where there's a crew of that will continue to do things that as taxpayers you don't want to be to be in the ether at being discussed at all.
Yeah, it's kind of like towel snappers in the locker room who have just gotten out of control. They think everything they say is funny, even if it's gross and indecent and homophobic and everything that you don't want your children to grow up to be. They have not got the corner of it, but they have thrown so many of these emails around, and the people in charge of the water department didn't do anything to stop them.
I mean, that's the scandal. You know, there are people who make bad decisions, but the fact that there was the commissioner of the water department who was on these email chains and did nothing but, you know, sort of, you know, move along down his inbox, I think that's what the real issue is. You know, the other thing is, and the reason why I think that it's been so damaging for Mayor Emanuel is that because, like you said, it seems like a holdover from the Daily years. It
right.
seems like
right.
from the 80s, the bad old days of council wars and, you know, open racism, which we as a society have decided that is not acceptable anymore. And the fact that it was so pervasive and there were so many people on these emails, right. And it comes from the water department, which, you know, has just a tortured history of just being, for lack of a better term, a cesspool,
right.
You know, of, right. Of patronage hires.
Yeah.
And to top it all off, of course, you've got a son of a former alderman who is the one spreading all this filth throughout the department. This is Paul Hansen.
It's a very salacious story and one that the Tribune investigative team's been all over. So we'll find out more about that story as it continues to unfold. All right, moving on. The other area I think that we have to talk about is state government. I mean, this is part of it because it was a state official. But another story here, as we have found a way to continue the dysfunction from the budget, which we finally found a way to come to an agreement on and just sort of transferred it to school funding. And we are seeing, once again, a conflict and chaos running amok in Springfield over school funding vetoes, veto majorities, and whether or not the schools in our state are going to open on time.
Only in Illinois can you reach an agreement that includes a trapdoor, which means that the most important function, I think many people would argue, won't get done, which is, of course, opening the schools on time.
Yeah.
And it's a really strange situation in that the governor is demanding that Democrats send him a bill that he is not happy with, except that he's happy with 90% of it, he said. And the part that he's not happy with resolves a very serious funding crisis that threatens last spring to close Chicago public schools 3 weeks early. And I don't know how it plays out.
Yeah, nobody really does. I think nobody really wants the schools not to open, right? But
especially not schools in downstate and the suburbs.
Right, right. And but also Chicago, too.
Right. But I think that for Rahner's political purposes,
right,
not opening schools in Chicago, because he could argue then they're mismanaged, it's Mayor Emanuel's fault, it's not my fault. But if, you know, schools don't open in Elgin and, you know, Oswego
and
Springfield, then it means that there's a larger issue.
I have to ask, you know, this is we hear this all the time. And Ray, you spent a large chunk of your career in Springfield.
Yeah.
But I mean, there has always been this idea that, you know, the one holding the bag for a school not opening on time, that's political suicide. I mean, and it's not going to be a finger pointer kind of thing, he said or she said. I mean, it usually falls at the feet of the governor. So it's
right.
Surprising that we even have flirting around this conflict.
Well, I think one of the strategies here by what we have here is a very unusual situation. Occasionally, a bill will pass, it'll be voted out, and then the head of the chamber will hold on to it for a while, not physically move it to the governor's office. And Senate President John Cullerton has done that. He's held on to this bill that Rahner can't wait to veto or put his amendatory veto on it. And the idea here is to put more pressure on Rahner to give in, to have to sign it, or to come to the table and come to some kind of agreement. Then Rahner, in an effort to try to beat back on that, he has blamed everybody and blamed Democrats for trying to kill education in Illinois.
He's even going tour to tour in other downstate communities and saying, hey, I'll give you the money that I would amendatory veto out for CPS. I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
So you can
give
more money to you. Yeah. So you should be mad at Democrats. Here's a question I have. And the one thing I will say about Governor Rahner, he gets criticized for moving goalposts and such. But in this case, he has been pretty clear from the get-go, even with the budget negotiation, that the pension payout to the CPS, Chicago Public School, I had offered it at one point, he had pulled it back, but he said it has to come with some sort of reform. This, in a way, feels very legislative in the way that they snuck it into a school formula bill that had nothing to do with school opening the door. And this is the way the Democrats are getting around that and putting a little political pressure on Rahner. But Rahner has stuck to his guns and say, I'm not giving you that 200 and whatever million dollars.
The problem with that, and I'm sure Forrest Claypool will be happy to have me make this argument for him because it's his argument, is that Chicago has 20% of Illinois' school children.
Yes, that's what the lawsuit was. Right.
And but Chicago gets 15% of of state funding. And that's largely because of a quirk in the way that Chicago teachers' pensions are paid. Chicago is the only school district that has to write the check out themselves instead of the state paying for it. So there's a complicated system of grants and pass-throughs and everything that comes through Chicago. And this formula bill basically says we're going to treat Chicago like every other school district. And we are going to acknowledge that the state hasn't made some of the payments that we were legally obligated to make on behalf of Chicago's teachers. So we're going to move towards, like they say, like to say, pension parity, right, and sort of solve those inequalities. But you're right that Rahner sees his one sort of pressure point with the Democrats is the CPS pension monies, and he desperately wants to be able to run for re-election and say, I fixed Illinois' pension crisis.
Right. And without that leverage, he doesn't really, that's never going to get fixed.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder how long they go. I mean, we'll see. Okay, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We got overreported. We got underreported. We didn't even, and the big loser this week too, the president. I mean, we didn't even get into how many losses he had this week. There were a few. I mean, it's funny to think the beginning of this week was the Boy Scouts.
Yes, the Boy Scouts had to apologize for what the president said at their jamboree.
That was this week. It doesn't even feel that way. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about it. Ray Long, Heather Schroen in studio tonight. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Ray Long, investigative reporter from the Chicago Tribune. Heather Schroen, City Hall reporter for DNA Info, both in studio tonight as we reload this week's news. Biggest stories we got through, winners, losers. It's time for overreported and underreported, and we'll stick on overreported. And I think all of the stories kind of revolve around the satellite that is President Trump. Why don't we start? I mean, overreported, I guess, even though it's also a rabbit hole story and it's winners and losers and everything in between, yeah, is the feud that the new communications director, Scaramucci, and the chief of staff, who is no longer the chief of staff, who resigned today, Reince Priebus, went public in the weirdest way possible with an on-the-record, off-the-record conversation with a reporter, with vulgarities and really an introduction to a new communications director in the Trump administration that has all of America a little bit antsy.
Yeah. So I'll defer to Ray since he has covered politics longer than I have. But in any other administration, if you used that kind of language with a reporter and it was published, you would be looking for a new job. Straight up. But it seems clear, I think, from the reporting specifically from the New York Times today, that not only did President Trump not object to it, that he saw that as a battle between Scaramucci and Priebus, and that he sided with Scaramucci as being tough and strong and not weak. And boy, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. And I mean, reading it was, I mean, it probably was the number one New Yorker piece of all time, it was published in, just for everyone going, what? I'm going to read this
stuff
again.
They said about Steve Bannon, too, where it was really over the top.
Think of that New Yorker fact checker who had to make that phone call.
I saw that going around. Mr. Bannon, I'd like to ask you something that Mr. Scaramucci said about you. Yeah, I mean, it is a strange, this is the kind of communications that the president wants. Someone who's going, like you said, who's rough around, who's rough and tough, and isn't going to mince words, even if those words are ones that scarcely are heard in public.
Well, he likes to throw out the hard words, and now he's got a general in as the chief of staff, General John F. Kelly. So he's now going to be that rough and tough guy too.
But apparently, we have no acting Homeland Security Secretary, so.
We don't need one. I started off, I kind of was joking last week because it's only been a week since Scaramucci started, a week and a couple days now. And I was somewhat impressed. I was like, now that is a little bit more of the cloth of what you expect a communication director to be. He can Teflon, he can bounce around, he can keep his temperament. Sean Spicer was almost not right for the job in the way that he got angry too quick. And we were like, But now you see a little bit of cracks in the foundation with an on record, off record, And the question is, he said, Scaramucci says to the press after the fact, I shouldn't have trusted a reporter. I should have, all of that was off the record. And he's essentially caught in a lie. Here we go again.
Yes. I mean, you know, I wonder how much, you know, your average Joe knows about these rules, but, you know, Ray and I live them, and you as a person I'm interviewing can't unilaterally declare our conversation off the record. It has to be an agreement that we've reached beforehand, or at least, you know, immediately afterward. And it's a gentleman's agreement, a gentlewoman's agreement. And it's not something that you can just say, oh, well, that was off the record.
You can't go back after
especially
the fact,
when
right?
you're somebody who's the White House communications director. You're supposed to know these rules. And, you know, I agree with you. I think it's overreported because it's essentially a contest between two men for the favor of their boss. I mean, that's essentially what it is. But these are the people being paid with our tax dollars, working the White House, who are responsible for running the federal government at a time when we are fighting wars in Afghanistan, we're fighting wars in, you know, all sorts of different places, and now apparently North Korea has an intercontinental ballistic missile that can hit Chicago. So there might be more important things going on. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, we just need an adult in the room here, or several adults in the room.
And that was supposed to be Priebus, right? He ran the RNC. He was a political professional. He, you know, had contacts on Capitol Hill. And he was, you know, he's only been there 6 months.
But I also say, Ray, I mean, it has only been 6 months, and it seems like the president loves turnover. That's the one thing I can take away from the early days here. But you know, there is something to be said that Rance Priebus was an appointment to Donald Trump who almost Trump didn't want. I mean, they were fighting at each other's throat during the campaign.
Right. And same thing with Sean Spicer. I don't think that the president ever was really fond of Sean Spicer. But and Spicer and Priebus were together in some ways, allies, if you will. And so, you know, you just get this whole ball of wax here. And Trump is now trying to clear the path and put in rough, tough guys.
Yeah, I don't think that the president ever forgave Priebus for recommending that he withdraw from the presidential election after the Access Hollywood quote-unquote locker room tape came out. I think he saw that as sort of an unforgivable weakness.
And you see that, I mean, we haven't even talked, again, that was this week. Jeff Sessions was this week.
Yes.
But the idea that that's the same concept, like when Jeff Sessions recused himself, he sees that as a point of weakness. I mean, there is something, there's consistency in the president's message that he wants the rough and tough guys, and he wants no one to apologize.
And I would almost, you know, there was a lot of reporting on Jeff Sessions, but I would almost say that the actual news of that has been underreported, because here we have the nation's top law enforcement official essentially being publicly cyberbullied on Twitter by his boss, the president. And you know, not only that, but for doing something that is clearly the law. If you're involved in an investigation, you have to recuse yourself. This is not something
that's one of the only things that makes sense.
Ethics are niceties sometimes.
Interesting, I think, is that you saw some Republicans on Capitol Hill saying, if you go further, Mr. President, there will be ramifications, because, of course, the speculation is that, you know, the president wants Jeff Sessions to resign so that he can appoint a new attorney general who will fire Robert Mueller, the special counsel. And then we're off to the races.
And you know what? This has been a reload so far that has not even gotten to the Russian investigation. So I feel good that we're this far along. Heather Sharone, Ray Long. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got underreported. We got these stories that took us down the rabbit hole. And what story is going to be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? What will be remembered? That's the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Judith Owen is in studio. I'm so excited to have her here. The band is setting up behind Heather and Ray.
Yes.
This is probably the most exciting reload of the week's news with Judith and Leland Sklar as well, right behind you. That's pretty great. Yeah,
yeah. I do notice legends in the studio. A bigger crowd gathering.
Yeah,
that
right,
I don't
right.
think is for us, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll I don't know about that.
We'll try to focus.
This is your chance to audition as a yes. singer now.
My thwarted mama. Dreams.
Yeah, this is, right. Well, they're coming up at 9 o'clock, so they're in getting ready to sound check. We'll continue right now. 312-981-7200. The phone number if you'd like to get in on the reloading of this week's news. We're doing the biggest stories, winners, losers, overreported, underreported, which story took us down the rabbit hole this week, and which story will be remembered from this week at 5, 10, 15, 500 years from tonight. I have mine. I already know mine. I got two of them. I got two.
Yeah.
I got to save room for that. All right, let's go to underreported. 400th yeah. homicide. This is something that is... startling that
it
this
is.
Didn't get more news.
Yeah, it's so we're halfway through the year. Last
July
year,
28th, right?
Yeah, there were just about a little over 700 murders last year. We're on pace, if not to meet that, to exceed that. Today there was a 4-year-old shot in the Austin neighborhood. His mother was killed right next to him. At the city council, there was a measure introduced that would basically seek to hold parents responsible if their kids have guns.
They get caught with an illegal firearm.
Because
right?
we've had a spate of robberies on the south side where it was, 10, 12-year-old boys with weapons. And, I think I've said this before on the show that, my judge of how something breaks through is whether the mayor is forced to address it during the week. And he was not asked about the 400th murder. And I think we've just sort of...
What do you think it is? Are we desensitized in the
way?
Well,
I think unfortunately, and we just see too many of the same things over and over and over, and we have all this craziness on the national level too. That is just another part of that heavy blur that we're getting in the news right. cycle.
Well, you heard. We heard the. President called. I think he was in Ohio at the rally where he said, "What's going on in Chicago?"
And again today,
right.
And he did it again today, and he called out Mayor Mann. The mayor better get tough. How does the mayor respond to this? I mean, are we done with this game of kind of responding when the?
Well, the mayor would sure like it to be done because he hates it when I ask him to respond. But his response this week was that it's not about toughness, it's about smartness. And Mayor Emanuel has talked extensively that it's, you need a holistic solution. It's jobs, it's after school programs, it's and getting guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have guns. And it's not just about toughness. But I think that I have to say my breath was taken away living in Chicago and hearing the president say that he wanted police to get tough with suspects and hit their heads on the police cruisers as they were being put in. And, I've written extensively about how the Department of Justice found that the Chicago Police Department repeatedly violated people's constitutional rights. So, the president of the United States today got up in front of a crowd of officers, encouraged them to commit civil rights abuses, and a whole bunch of officers cheered.
But, one of the things there is, and I think that's part of the Trump citizenry, that he wants to try to rile up the base, and he wants to try to get people to go, yeah, nothing's politically correct, let's just go back to the good old days, which aren't really that good. And we've seen the really bad things that have happened, and we're trying to get it under control. But when you get somebody out there who's trying to light the fire over and over again, you just can't quell the flame.
Yeah, and I mentioned that the Boy Scouts had to apologize. And, of course, today the Suffolk County Police Department, who hosted the president this afternoon, had to put out a statement, our officers are not allowed to do that. That's just...
just a wake that is left of apology, wake, wherever the president goes. I mean, we've been talking for an hour and a half about this week's news. And all the stories that have happened. And we have yet to talk about transgender ban in the military.
Oh, yeah.
We have yet to talk about the Department of Justice, which I thought was very underreported, but the Department of Justice arguing against workplace
that
protections.
That the Civil Rights
and
Act
civil
does
rights
not
for
apply
LGBTQ.
To gay people. Right.
I mean, these are... I still... And I talked about it on air yesterday and the day before. A head scratcher of why there seems to be a push to want to start these. It almost feels like the president is picking fights with communities when there isn't even – I mean, the Justice Department doesn't even have to get involved in that conversation, yet Jeff Sessions is putting it forward. I mean, they're being proactive in this case.
Yeah, these are tectonic plates in the whole political debate, and you're just moving them just at random. So then people are then ending up – thrown over into a whole bucket where they don't want to be and they don't deserve to be. So you have this, you once think that the nation and the social fabric and the moral higher ground is moving in one direction, and then you see it moving in another direction all of a sudden just because the president is out tweeting.
Okay, so moving on from that. Let's
super exciting, happy, fun times.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, as we talk about underreported, it was interesting to me that the justice stuff didn't really get reported. And there's a lot going on. I mean, other thing from what happened today with the talking to the officers. But also here in Chicago, which I thought was a big story, and you just talked about it. But the idea of the city council starting to think differently about how they approach gun violence. And that was with this ordinance, this proposed idea that they would give community service to parents if kids were caught with illegal firearms. This is something that I've never – I mean, think about the days of Mayor Daley and other places in the city council. This is not an area that they wade into, and it's surprising to me that they did. And I thought it was very underreported.
Well, and not only that, but they're not proposing jail time for parents. They're saying clearly something has gone wrong in your family structure and that mm-hmm. we have, as a city, need to intervene in some ways. It was, you know, community service is not always meant to be punitive. And the way the ordinance is at least written at this point, it's designed to sort of get these families, you know, that have been exposed to violence into some sort of supportive system, which I think you're right is a sea change from where we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, where I think people like Alderman Ed Burke, who proposed it, would be lock them up.
Absolutely. Heather Sharon, Ray Long in studio tonight, 312-981-7200. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do what stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered from this week 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from now. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Ray Long, Heather Sharon in studio as we are reloading this week's news. A couple of stories that took us down the rabbit hole, and then we'll talk about which stories will be remembered from this week. I think there's a lot. Usually that's a stretch, but I mean, runner-ups right now. The idea that North Korea has did another ballistic missile test that actually landed way too close to Japan, and the idea this afternoon that they say, I'm not sure who says, but they have a missile that could reach Chicago. That's a run. That's not even the one that I would pick, and that's a runner-up.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, things have gotten real.
Good. Yeah,
that may be the one that is remembered 500 years.
Yeah,
from now,
that's. I still think there are bigger stories than that, but that's a huge one. All right, let's talk about which stories took you down the rabbit hole. We'll start with you, Ray.
One of my own stories took me down the rabbit hole.
Those are the good ones, right?
That was the one where we dealt with a lobbyist for the teacher union, and he, a few years ago, jumped through a window that was drawn up through some legislation that allowed him to teach a day as a substitute teacher and then get into the teacher union pension and buy back 10 years worth of union time. Not teaching time. He'd never been a teacher before, and he was able to buy back, buy into that, get some time into the teacher retirement system. And then when we wrote about it a few years ago, they changed the law and said, you can't go back and get that. Now, he said, hey, I should be able to go back and get that based on other laws. And he went to court, and guess what? He did not win. Surprisingly, a lot of people thought he was going to win. So,
well, I mean, this is the story.
This is a rabbit hole.
This is when you get pulled out into the we have corruption or people are taking advantage of pensions and why do we have the system and pension reform. It's when the stories like this come out
and
where you're
unions,
like, yeah, and unions. Yeah. I mean, this is the one that you'll get people see.
Yeah,
this is the problem. But these are not the norm. These are needle in a haystack type stories.
Well, you hope. I mean, maybe if I dug a little more, there would be some
get
more
on
that
it,
I
Ray.
Could find. Yeah, right.
What else you got to do, Ray? You're done
yeah,
with the water
right,
story.
Right. Yeah, okay. So I'll be working on that.
All right. Heather, what do you got for a story that took you down the rabbit hole?
So today at that Staten Island event the president had, he again told the story of how he was in Chicago and a cop pulled him aside and said, if you let me, I could solve crime in a week. And we were never able to, and when I say we, I mean the Chicago media, were never able to figure out who this officer was. And the president talked a little bit more about it. Apparently he was a motorcycle cop. He said he didn't even need a week to solve Chicago's violence problem. He told the president said today, I could solve it in 2 days and I just need to get really tough. And of course we asked, and that he had gotten the officer's name and that he had passed it on to Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Now what's interesting is that Mayor Rahm Emanuel completely and flatly denies that the president ever gave him this motorcycle cop's name. And what's interesting is that no Chicago police officer motorcycle units were ever assigned to accompany the president through Chicago. So if this officer exists, and I feel like I'm living in a little bit of crazy town, that I am on the air of WGN openly questioning, you know, did the president make up this Chicago cop for his own purposes? But that's what the mayor of Chicago said today, that essentially to use Chicago violence, and we just talked about 400 people being killed, as some sort of wedge issue. And that is, I think, the ultimate rabbit hole story, because of course I can never know for sure that there isn't some police officer who rode a motorcycle in a, you know, some sort, exactly,
right.
Who
happened,
said that I could have done it in 2 days, and that somehow, you know, the president has seized on this. And
And you've got this whole idea where Trump is out there talking about violating civil rights at the same time.
Yes.
Well, God help us, what that
motorcycle
effort
police
would be.
What is being tough? And it just, as a Chicagoan, it hurts my heart, because it's like we're somehow morally deficient in that we can't solve this problem on our own. Whereas, you know, people have given their lives over, and, you know, years of hard, you know, sweat and tears, and to solve this problem. And it just, you know, Mayor Emanuel was very frustrated with my questions today. I'll just put it that way.
My rabbit hole story, I didn't know anything about this story, and I have a couple, but the one we'll talk about, which was a big story we haven't talked about, was the plant that, the manufacturing plant that was brought to, looks like it's coming to southeastern Wisconsin between Racine, Milwaukee, and Chicago. Mm-hmm. Foxconn, which is a company that supplies parts for Apple for making iPhones. Huge number of jobs, 3,000 jobs. Donald Trump has a press conference suggesting, you know, Wisconsin, great place.
Scott Walker, great guy.
And what I thought was interesting was what sucked me down the rabbit hole was you started to see the editorial that the Tribune did that said, see, this is why we need more business-friendly government in the state of Illinois. This is what Bruce Rauner's talking about. We were never in running for any manufacturing plant in a blue state in the middle and with the city of Chicago in it. But yet we have these like hypotheticals that we like to pull out, that if Bruce Rauner, and I think it was, I forgot who did, but somebody called out, I think it was Dave Lundy, a friend of mine who's on Touche, he does Monday nights here. Where was our plan? Where was Did you have the Foxconn executives come to the state of Illinois? Did we miss that tour? Did you not invite the media? Where was the proposal from Governor Rauner in the state of Illinois? There wasn't one.
Secret plan to end the war.
Yeah. Yes. So I guess the point being that somehow politics plays in this, and then you go down the rabbit hole with what Foxconn, again, you know, they don't necessarily have the greatest track record when it comes to employees and their relationship with unions. And then the fact that how much money the state of Wisconsin put out in subsidies to get them, $3 billion.
Yeah. It's $1 million per job that will pay $53,000 annually. And my frustration is, you know, I get a lot of emails, as you might imagine, and it's always about people taking from the government, you know, people on welfare, people on food stamps. And if that's not a government handout, I don't know what is.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea that staggering amount of money that the state government had to pay, or the state of Wisconsin has to pay, just to get the jobs to this area.
Well, and we've written about, in fact, I dove into that issue here in Illinois just last year. We had this program that allowed the government basically to throw millions of dollars to companies based on the number of jobs they got, and they could cut special deals, et cetera. This program expired during this whole time that Foxconn was wooing Wisconsin. So where was Illinois in this? And if they were trying to do something, we didn't see it.
No, we didn't see it. And frankly, I was surprised. I know it's a very small set, but if you go to Facebook and you look at the post from the Chicago Tribune editorial board and you look at the Facebook comments, they're usually pretty conservative.
It's a conservative
and page, right. It was surprising to see the comments almost in unison saying that this editorial is not right. Foxconn is not, it's not a great thing that this company came into Wisconsin. This is actually, this is not a good deal for anybody. But jobs play a big role in that. Jobs are political capital, I guess. 312-981-7200. All right, let's wrap it up. This is what we've been waiting for, right? Which story from this week will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from now? What was the story? There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you could go with healthcare.
I'm going to go with healthcare.
You're going to go with healthcare, right?
I'm going to go with healthcare. Not only does Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, remain the law of the land, as I understand Senate procedures, if Republicans were to do something, they could no longer do it with 51 votes. They would have to meet that 60-vote filibuster margin, which I think makes it very unlikely that they would be able to do something that would not be bipartisan. But what's interesting is the number of Democratic lawmakers who did not dismiss out of hand Medicare for all or a single payer. Now, if you remember the Obamacare debate back in 2009, that was considered straight up socialism. And you could not find a Democratic lawmaker anywhere who would voice any kind of support for that. And I think that what we've seen in this debate has sort of shifted the ground, that tectonic plate that you were talking about, Ray, in that a large majority of Americans now believe that the government has an obligation to afford some form of affordable health care to people.
Yeah.
And I think when you agree on that, it changes sort of where the discussion goes.
That is the takeaway from this story, is that they were no longer debating whether or not there should be affordable public
options. And let's remember what failed was, you know, quote unquote, skinny repeal. It was not a root and branch repeal of Obamacare. That did not come even anywhere close to getting 51 votes.
Right. We're on the 52nd year anniversary coming up on Sunday of Lyndon Johnson signing the Medicare thing, too. So,
yes.
Medicare thing. Medicare.
That Medicare
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
yeah. Right, what do you got, Ray?
Well, I'm going to talk to you about the one that we've briefly mentioned, and I hope it doesn't still be resonating 500 years from now. But, you know, if the North Koreans have got this missile that could, whether it reaches Chicago or anywhere in the United States, even if it's Alaska, let's say, you know, even in the wilderness and it's just affecting polar bears, this is going to be something that people are going to be talking about.
All right, I got two. You ready?
Yeah.
Fire.
Lay it on us.
You're the host.
Artificial intelligence story that came out of Facebook and Elon Musk that were arguing with each other. The idea that somewhere in Facebook labs, two computers were talking to each other in a language that they invented, that nobody else understood, and Facebook had to shut it down. That's scary.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff where you're like, yeah. And you know what they're saying? They're going, I don't like the humans. Do you like the humans?
I'm telling you.
I don't like the humans.
I don't like their tweets,
Battlestar Galactica is real.
That's a story we're going to remember in 500 years from this week. The other one, which I thought was really interesting, it can go either way, the editing of human embryos. Scientists were able to go in and mess with DNA and genetics of an embryo. That has consequences for health, for disease. It also has consequence for some strange stuff that's genetic engineering that we haven't even thought about. That's the story that I think we're going to be looking at this week in 500 years.
But we won't be able to think that far in 500 years because all of that will be edited out.
That would have been edited out. This week would have been edited out. Ray Long, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Heather Sharon, City Hall reporter at DNA Info. Can't thank you guys enough for coming in and reloading this week's news. Appreciate it.
All right.
Anytime.